I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
Is everyone feeling our pain?
Yes.
This is what we deal with every minute of every day. We got families. We got jobs. We got each other. Thank F for that. Because it's black women that keep black women strong to continue the fight for justice in this country.
This date, the 15th of April, marks 30 years since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody. In that time, more than 474 Indigenous people have died in custody, five just in the past month.
Since March. That's four since March.
Today, the Indigenous families demanding change after more than 30 years of violence.
Let's remember, it's not a broken system. It's a system that works exactly how it was set up to work.
It's Thursday, the 15th of April. So on Saturday, I headed to a protest in Sydney. It was one of many planned for the National Day of Action to end Aboriginal deaths in custody. Across my career, I've covered quite a few Indigenous protests, and often you do turn up and there's only a couple of hundred people there. It can be mostly the Indigenous community, quite a few politicians and activists. I could probably name a lot of the faces that I see there. But last year, we saw this enormous turnout for the Black Lives Matter protests in June, and we're seeing bigger and bigger turnouts. So there was this question if we would see that again on the weekend, and I wasn't quite sure what to expect. But when I got to Sydney's Town Hall, I was pretty impressed.
I can't hear you! Are we ready, Sydney?
It was well over 1,000, if not 2,000 people. It was pretty hard to tell because the crowd was spread out at Town Hall all across the area, around corners and around the block. On the steps of the town hall, there's the bottom of the steps is kind of lined with laminated photos. And each of those photos has someone, an Indigenous person who's died in custody. Photos from decades ago of people who died, but also photos of people who have only died in the past year or so. And many of these people are people who I've reported on and I've spoken to their families. We've got Wayne Fellow Morrison, and on it says, Father of One, died after 6 days on remand, and it's got the date of his death. Rebecca Ma, 36. Eddie Murray, 21. John Pat, 16. Ms. Du, 22. TJ Hickey, 17. Nathan Reynolds, 36. It feels like someone that you know after having spoken to their families. You know, they're just so familiar to you. A few other signs at the end there. And just at the bottom of all of these laminated photos is a big Aboriginal flag. These deaths don't just represent grief for their family members, it represents grief for their community and Indigenous people. There's rarely a community that hasn't been affected by losing a loved one in custody or at least having a loved one in custody. So it was a pretty incredible atmosphere. There was really this sense of people had shown up and people were ready to speak out.
He is fine. He is deadly. He is a brother. Give it up for Maine Wyatt.
Someone who's always an incredible speaker is Maine Wyatt, actor and activist.
Now you go, Maine Wyatt. Why got the beer in the pan and I calculate? For all you people that didn't know what I just said, my name is Maine Wyatt. I am from Kalgoorlie, Western Australia.
And his speech was just an incredible call to action, full of passion and rage.
The Royal Commission, where we talked about recommendation after recommendation, been ignored completely. You sick of hearing about racism? I'm sick of fucking talking about it! Five Aboriginal people in the last 4 weeks. 4 weeks! Are you angry? Because I fucking am! I'm sick and tired of this. I want to thank my aunties and uncles here sitting here, my brothers and sisters, to allow me to speak today. But I hate fucking doing it. I hate and I'm sick and tired of doing it.
Another person who spoke is Paul Silver, who's the nephew of David Dungay Jr., a Dungutty man.
G'day, how he's going, everyone? So my name's Paul Silver. I'm the nephew of David Dungay Jr., and I can guarantee many of you have seen me over the past 5 years.
You know, last year, David Dungay's name was on everyone's lips. It was those eerie parallels between his case where he died being held down, saying, "I can't breathe," with the case of George Floyd. It was a bit of a lightning rod for this issue and continues to be a lightning rod for this issue. And his nephew, Paul Silver, has just become more and more of an activist and a voice on this issue as the years go on.
It shows our government facilities and systems will treat you if your skin colour's black. They thrive off systematic racism and it's killing our people. You know, I look around today and so many other people from all different nationalities have walked with us. Now, that says a lot within itself. You know, not just this black fella's sick of the injustice against the First Nations people, but all of you guys are too. And you'd think 30 years on from a Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody that the government will get off their fucking asses and take drastic action in regards to these events. But no, they sit down on their backsides, get highly paid, and are watching human beings die.
As the speeches ended, the protesters formed a procession with a lot of the families of the deaths in custody at the front, holding the signs, the laminated photos of their family members. And they walked. The crowd of thousands of people kind of spread back over more than a block. You couldn't see the end from the start. And they walked along chanting. There was also a moment where the crowd stopped and there was a line of protesters holding all of these photos facing a line of police in the middle of one of the busiest streets in Sydney.
These are the faces that you guys must remember. It doesn't take a lot to pull handcuffs out and put them on your colleagues for their wrongdoings.
Feel our pain!
Feel our pain! Feel our pain!
Now we're going to go through and ask us all to do these names, ready? Say their name! Wayne Fella Morrison, everyone!
Wayne Fella Morrison!
Miss Jew!
Miss Jew!
Nathan Reynolds!
It did feel like this incredible moment. I mean, there's a lot of talk about how these stories don't get the attention that they deserve, that other media doesn't cover it, that people don't know the names of these deaths in custodies in the way that they should. And just hearing each of their names called out and thousands of people responding and calling out their names as well, it just felt like a moment of recognition.
Even John Gundy!
Even John Gundy!
Louder, louder!
Even John Gundy!
John Pat!
John Pat!
Say his name!
John Pat!
And I heard that the same thing happened at other protests, these names being called out and recognised.
The family of Sharinda Wynn and Warren John Cooper. The family of Christian Drake and the family of Trezak Simpson. The family of David Dungay Jr. The family of Gareth Jackson Rowe. the family of Joyce Gladys Clark, the family of Mrs. Doo, the family of Nathan Reynolds, the family of Tate Chatfield, the family of Auntie Cherie Fisher Tilbury, and the family of Wayne Feller Morrison. To these families, I say, we hear you, we see you, we honour your resilience and your sense of justice.
Next, one family, two deaths in custody.
It doesn't take much to be arrested. You can be committing no crime at all. Tanya Day was asleep on the train on the way from Chuka to Melbourne. She had a paid for ticket, but she was removed for being unruly. Now, how can you be unruly when you're asleep? They removed her from the train. In the cells, Tanya had a terrible fall. That was at about 4:30 in the afternoon. She started to deteriorate. The ambulance didn't get there till 8:30, and it was too late. I feel so sad for Tanya's family, all her family.
Hey.
Hey, is that April?
How are you?
April Day is a Yorta Yorta, Wemba Wemba and Brapa Brapa woman and the founder of the Dajua Foundation, an organisation providing culturally appropriate support for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander families whose loved ones have died in custody. Her mother, Tanya Day, died in 2017 after being arrested for public drunkenness and hitting her head 5 times while in custody. On the weekend, she spoke in front of thousands in Naam.
Since that Royal Commission, we have had over 474 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people die at the hands of police and prisons. And from them 474, we've had 0 convictions. Shame. Shame! I've lost count how many times I've stood here and had this yarn, and I'm only here because my mother, Tanya Louise Day, is in within those numbers. And I stand here to remind everybody that these are just...
You know, like hearing the stories, you know, we all sort of read out different speeches, but it's really, really weighs you down and it gets me really emotional. And sometimes I, like, especially at rallies, I have to switch off my emotions just to be able to get through the day because otherwise it's too difficult. And I feel like that's with a lot of our families, you know, like we're dealing with our own trauma and our own grief, but then we're also... listening to these families, and it just, you know, it really breaks my heart hearing their stories because I can relate to it so much. Like all of our stories are different, but that feeling of having your loved one be taken and killed in custody, like that feeling that we have is all the same, even though the circumstances are different.
So a lot of people around Australia do know your story and your family's story, and we've spoken about it here on the podcast as well when you came on last year. But I think a lot of people may not know how closely your family is linked to this anniversary and to the Royal Commission. I'm wondering if you can tell me a bit about that and about Harrison Day.
Yeah, so I guess this is just another example of the intergenerational trauma of Aboriginal deaths in custody. Our Uncle Harrison Day died in police custody back in 1982, and he was arrested for a $10 fine that he had for public drunkenness. And he was taken to the Echuca police cell where he had suffered a medical episode, an epileptic fit, which he died from while he was in police custody there. So he was one of the cases that were included in the 99 in the Royal Commission.
Yeah, he was one of the cases that the Royal Commission investigated in the late 80s and early 90s. And from that, it was recommended that the laws around public drunkenness in states and territories around Australia be abolished, right?
Yeah, that's one of the recommendations, which, you know, I'm sure everyone's aware of, would be the abolition of public drunkenness. So it was just makes it a lot harder to wrap your head around knowing that a family member of the Day family was arrested in Echuca on our own country for public drunkenness when he wasn't actually drunk. It was just a $10 fine, has then died in custody, included in the Royal Commission, and having that recommendation to decriminalise public drunkenness, to have mum arrested for the same law 30 years later and then also die in police custody. It's horrific and it's sad, and, you know, I feel for my Day family and our uncles who had to experience that, losing him, had to experience the Royal Commission and not receiving any acknowledgement or justice. And it wasn't until mum had died that people started to mention Uncle Harrison's name and started to acknowledge what had happened to him. You know, that's horrible. That was 30 years ago and he just was not acknowledged. It was just, you know, it happened and they just moved on. And, you know, seeing my elders coming to mum's inquest on that first day, you know, like broken. Not like they still haven't been able to heal from losing their brother in custody. And now they're having to relive it again for their niece. And, you know, well, our family's not the only family that has experienced similar trauma like that with death in custody. And I don't know, it's just, how many more of our families after generation need to die in custody before we are acknowledged and things are put in place to ensure that this doesn't keep happening?
Even after that recommendation that public drunkenness should be abolished 30 years ago, you know, it took so many years and campaigning by your family for years after your mother's death for that law to change in Victoria, and there's many more recommendations that are yet to be implemented. What do you make of that 30-year delay?
It's just a complete failure on the Victorian government's end. That's just in relation to the public drunkenness.
Mm.
You know, if that had been decriminalised when it was first recommended, mum could still be here today. The coroner have foreshadowed that recommendation on the first directions hearing. And then it wasn't until 12 months later that they had actually made that announcement that they will decriminalise it. And that was on the eve of her coronial inquest. To me, it's just not good enough. You know, yes, we welcome it, but it's too late for mum. And it's too late for everybody else that had died from that law, because it is 30 years too late. And I just think about all those recommendations. You know, they have a Gehrman report that says that the majority have them that have been implemented, but that's how you think it's been implemented. That's your version of ticking a box. They haven't been meaningfully implemented. Mm-hmm. They haven't been set up to make sure that they succeed. And we know that they haven't been implemented because our loved ones are still dying in custody.
Mm-hmm.
That right there is enough evidence to know that what you're saying is not true. Because mum is one of them deaths, and there are multiple other family members that I know that out of their coroner findings, they're old recommendations. Now, that's a kick in the guts to our families to be sitting there reliving our trauma, to sit in a coronial inquest for them to tell us what had already been said 30 years ago.
Mm.
These demands have been worked on by the 15 families. And together we have put these together and putting this to the governments. Number one, governments need to fully implement all recommendations of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal deaths in custody while involving and listening to our families. Two, we need an independent investigative body to inquire into all deaths in custody. Police must not investigate other police officers or prison officers.
you spoke powerfully on the weekend about your campaign where 15 black families had banded together and sent out a list of demands for governments to implement to end black deaths in custody. Can you talk me through that campaign and these demands?
Yeah, so it's a powerful campaign because it's family-led. And, you know, we've been working together for a while now for this past year, gearing up for the anniversary. We have now put out a petition that we're calling on support, and that petition is calling on the Prime Minister to meet with us and to discuss what's happening within the nation and, you know, talk about our loved ones that have died in custody and what it looks like moving forward to ensure that our families aren't experiencing the same trauma over and over again. Mm. We've also got 10 demands that we have worked on as a family that we have also put forward. And, you know, a lot of those recommendations aren't any different to what was actually in the Royal Commission.
I mean, one of the demands that I read was around ensuring that families are supported through the process of a coronial inquest. As it stands, what does that process put Indigenous families through? What do people need to know about that?
Oh, it's like hell and back. I think you go in there thinking you're going to get truth and justice and you leave with nothing but disappointment. You go into it and they play the footage of your loved one over and over again and you watch them die over and over again and they still don't acknowledge them for the person that they are. You have the coroners fail to find the recommendations that, you know should be made and that you're hoping are made, but they never are.
Mm.
And then you leave thinking that the recommendations were made, were going to be implemented, and they don't. They're not.
How could that process change for the better to actually support families and ensure that that justice that you've just said is so lacking, ensure that that justice happens?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, having a look at our demands, if these things are being implemented, we shouldn't even be needing to go to the coroner's court,
mm.
you know. But, like, if we are, it needs to be set up where it's a culturally safe for families, that there's no barriers placed on the families, that they can't sit there and express their emotions and their feelings and share their loved one proudly. Like, you know, I know in the coroner's court, families can't gasp and cry in court. They get told to, you know, sort of like control themselves.
Mm.
They can't express their sorrow. They can't show up with a t-shirt with their loved one's face on it. We were lucky. We pushed as far as we possibly could to make sure that mum and her spirit and our culture was displayed proudly within that courtroom. Mm. And we shouldn't have to fight so hard to do that. Other families don't even get to have that t-shirt. They make them take them off. You know, and that's horrific. And like one of our demands is that we need an independent investigative body to investigate Aboriginal deaths in custody because we know that police should not be investigating police.
Mm.
You know, it's flawed and it's always, always inadequate.
You mentioned that you sent these demands to the Prime Minister and you've called on the Prime Minister to speak with you and the 14 other families. How long have you been asking the Prime Minister to meet with you?
Oh, yeah. The call to meet with the families was made a few months back and that call was denied.
What do you mean denied?
So they actually said that they wouldn't meet with us.
Mm.
And these are our loved ones, you know, they've continuously ignored our calls for justice. They've ignored our loved ones, but, you know, they've met with others when they've been called upon. So why not meet with us too?
Does it surprise you that especially on this anniversary and in this time that the Prime Minister won't meet with a coalition of black families who want to talk about such an essential issue?
It's sort of that it doesn't surprise me, but it shocks me in a way. Like, what I'm finding hard for me to wrap my head around is, you know, this is the 30th anniversary. We've now at 474, and we've had 5 Aboriginal people die in custody in the past month. How is that not a national crisis?
Mm.
Or is it not just because they're black families?
What is your message to the Prime Minister on this anniversary?
That these are loved ones. Their grandmothers, grandfathers, fathers, brothers, sisters, and they're extremely missed and grieved every single day, and our lives will never be the same without them. It's his responsibility to meet with the families, to have a discussion about how to acknowledge and respect our loved ones and how to ensure that these demands are implemented effectively so that there are no more Aboriginal deaths in custody. Because the numbers will continue to rise if they keep continuing to ignore our calls for justice.
We reached out to the Prime Minister's office and the Minister for Indigenous Australians about the demands from the Coalition of Indigenous Families and their request to meet with the government, but at the time of recording, they had not responded. To learn more about the Dadjua Foundation and their work, go to dadjua.com.au. That's D-H-A-D-J-O-W-A. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Ellen Leibeater, Joe Koning and John Chia. The executive producers of Full Story are Miles Martignoni and Gabrielle Jackson. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Okay, catch you tomorrow.